As we move from ski season to spring, it's time to get those mountain bikes out. Most ski families use season passes to make skiing more affordable and fun. If your family mountain bikes, there's a new way to save on those adventures too. Make the most of spring and summer in the mountains with Loam Pass, the premier North American mountain biking pass. Loam Pass gives you over 60 days of access to some of the best mountain biking destinations across the country. Use discount code SKIMOMS15 to save 15% off your family's Loam Pass today at loampass.com. That's LOAMPASS.com. Loam Pass is available in two versions, for kids ages 6 to 11 and the adult pass for ages 12 and up. The pass combines access to the most premier resorts, gets you into bike parks, and connects you to shuttle companies to get you where you need to be. It's the one pass you need to bring the best cycling to your family. Remember, you'll get 2 days at each of the resorts, parks, or shuttles, making the investment one that will pay off big. Remember to use code SKIMOMS15 to save 15% off your family's Loam Pass today.
Welcome to the Ski Mom Fun Podcast. We're your hosts, Nicole and Sarah.
A quick note to make sure you all know about the Ski Moms Fun website and store. We have all sorts of great Ski Mom swag, from stickers to hats, and we're just loving the soft, quick-drying neck buffs. So please check it out. Go to SkiMomsFun.com and click on Store to see all the goodies and get your own. As always, 10% of the profits go to Share Winter Foundation. Check it out. Today, we're so excited to be joined by Connie Marshall. Connie's going to tell us about her incredible 44-year career at Alta Ski Area in Utah. Welcome, Connie. We're so happy you're here.
Connie, we'll start at the beginning. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and skiing at, and I don't want to misquote you here, the reclaimed garbage dump in Ohio. So let's start with your origin story with skiing.
I love that. So a small town that's east of Columbus, so it's right in central Ohio. I think there were 42,000 people there, roughly, as I was starting to understand demographic or population and everything. And I think that number hasn't really changed. A small town where everyone really knew everyone. And my father's side had been there for several generations. And great childhood growing up under kind of the strict family deal that people who were born to folks who suffered depression and war and everything expect their children to be. But we got a little bit of freedom in late junior high and high school. They did not ski. We had bought into a little toboggan hill with a rope tow. And that was my dad's forte. But that was our first thing on skis. And it was owned by a egg farmer just outside of town. And so we would go over there on Sundays and put on our wooden skis with the cable and the leather boots, and never had a lesson, but just really loved that feeling of being outside. And then as my brother got his learning permit and driver license, my dad would let us take the family station wagon occasionally to Clear Fork. And it was definitely a garbage. And I guess that's pretty common in the Midwest. We had quite a bit of hills because it was glacier created terrain, but this must have just been the perfect shape. And a little warming hat at the bottom. And we would just go and ski and ski and get soaking wet. And if you got off the man-made snow and into the cornfield, it was just okay. But it sparked a winter interest in, I think, just sliding downhill. But more so just my parents were very nature-oriented. So there were all every Sunday. We couldn't ski on Sundays, but we did family trips, and you know, all 88 counties in Ohio were checked off, and those included winter hikes and that sort of thing.
Tell us about making your way west and what led to that.
All righty. Well, there was a little bit of a idea of making my way west always in my head, but when I was in sixth grade, I was invited to visit my Uncle Chick, who was the general manager of Alta at that time, and his wife, who was my dad's sister. So I went out in sixth grade. It was my first flight on any airline, but it happened to be TWA. My first pair of blue jeans, which will make you laugh. And I didn't arrive until the evening, and I woke up the next morning and I was in a bunk room downstairs, and it was up above where the road to Alta is at the end. They fortunately have been able to build a cabin up in the mountain overlooking Alta. And I looked out the window and the sun was just coming up on Mount Superior, and I could smell because there isn't a lot of sagebrush, but the sage and the different vegetation, because this would have been in June. And I thought I had died and gone to heaven. My favorite children's book growing up was Heidi. And I felt like I was Heidi. And so I just knew I always wanted to go back, but wasn't really sure. I mean, obviously wasn't thinking about a career, but, hoping they'd allow me to come and visit them again. And then I went to college at a very small private school in Michigan. There's about 1,800 students enrolled, and had a lovely time. And in my senior year, the Peace Corps had sent in a recruiting team. And I felt like I just wanted to do a life of service or something, understanding how to help other people. So I attended all of the Peace Corps sessions. I think there were probably about 12 of us and felt very encouraged. You know, they weren't able to, understand what our applications would really look like, but we were encouraged to apply. And so I did, and graduated and moved back down to Central Ohio to be with my parents, at least for the summer, awaiting for my calling. And in August, I got a very nicely written letter just saying, this is hard for us to say this for people who are so interested. And funding was had been cut around that time. And I was a liberal arts major and never had built a porta potty or dug a well. And they encouraged me to maybe try again. So at that point, my father, as I was crying in my bedroom, just said, you just finished college. Why don't you just take a little time and figure out what you want to do? And I just thought, wow. My cousin Kim had now moved to Crested Butte. She invited me to come out and just sleep on her couch and apply for a job in Crested Butte. So I flew out in a dress and nylons. And I don't know if you guys have ever been to Crested Butte, but it's kind of a gnarly place. Everyone seemed like they
it is not a it is not a nylon and dress kind of place.
But I was excited, and I know I spent at least a week looking for a job, and I did get one at a restaurant, kind of a high-end one, and I had to buy, and I'm just saying, roughly $200 worth of uniform pieces, which, in today's dollar, maybe that would be $5.
Thousands, maybe, yeah.
Thousands, millions, it felt like to me, and I didn't even have the cash to do that, and my heart was kind of sinking because, Kim had introduced me to a lot of friends. It was prior to ski season, so I hadn't gotten on the gnarly mountain yet. And I just was second guessing if I was doing the right thing. And so my new aunt, Chick's secretary, who he had married, had been down in Arizona visiting her daughter. And so she was passing through to say hi to Kim. And she said, what are you doing here? Come back to Alta with me, to the little house that I love. And apply for a job. I know you'll get one. So I rode back to Alta with her. And right when we pulled into the parking lot, I went into the ticket office because that's where young women would have applied and got a job. And then I marched over to Uncle Chick's office and said, I'm going to be working for you. I wanted to kind of surprise him, but I also didn't want to think that he felt like, he needed to put in a word for me. I wanted to get it by myself.
Yeah, Sarah and I both have high school seniors, and everything seems so, the stakes seem so high with so many things. And, we're also looking at what happened as a rejection, from the Peace Corps turned out to be an incredible opportunity because it puts you on a different path. So I do love that portion of your story. And as you're reflecting on it now, you know, probably you probably would have been great at the Peace Corps, but you know, you also like would have missed out on this beautiful outdoor life that you created.
And I did continue with a life of service too.
You did.
I have a really philanthropic view of things, and you know, people made it possible for me to be me, and I want to do that for them. But yes, it was all, you know, some people, three other siblings had a firm plan in mind for their lives and did very well. And I always felt like I was just kind of an accident waiting to happen. But as we now are all retired and look back, they said, you know what, we think you were the luckiest. It is a fairy tale, I guess.
You were working in the ticket office, and you know, what was Alta's flavor back then? Were you getting a lot of families at the mountain when you started there?
Let's take a quick break. Spring is here, and we know even after the snow melts, ski moms love to play outside. Skeeta, our favorite Vermont outdoor accessory brand, has you covered as the seasons change. This spring, Skeeta is celebrating its 16th birthday with fresh prints like the Pastel, Whimsical, and Plein Air collection. Our favorite pieces include the throwback headbands. This headband is made to keep hair and sweat off your face. The single-ply design gathers neatly in the back for maximum styling. Wear it scrunched or lay it flat, it's your perfect partner for any activity where you want a great pop of color and style with minimal fuss. For sunny days, we adore the Skeeta brim hat. This 5-panel camp hat is the perfect grab-and-go companion. Made in a lightweight, water-repellent material, this hat is ideal for hiking, camping, and the beach. Whether you are cheering the kids on at a lacrosse game, exploring with your girlfriends, or simply walking in the woods with your loyal pup, Skeeta accessories are there to make ski mom life more fun. Save 15% off your order with code SKIMOMS15 at checkout.
We were, but it was a very different mix at that time, because I had to work backwards when I became the marketing director to kind of understand, is there what no one was writing down where people were from. Roughly 80% locals, even in the early 90s. So it was a Salt Lake and surrounding area group who was skiing Alta. And I don't know if you guys know a lot about the LDS faith, but it's much like the Catholic, there's a huge emphasis in having children, you know, spirits, I guess, to keep the world going. And we were a very family-oriented place, and our whole Albion Basin was really quite desirable for skiing for beginners. And the infrastructure in Utah in the ski world was much smaller then. And we really had the best gateway of a place to have families start out, either for themselves, I mean, the parents, but also for the children. That was just easy terrain and very comfortable.
So tell us what happened in your career path after the ticket office.
Well, the ticket office thing actually lasted for 17 years, and it went by in a blink of an eye. The beginning of my third year, I went from a seasonal employee to a year-round employee with a small bump in pay. And it made me feel like, wow, maybe there is something I can do here. Meanwhile, married my husband, who came a couple years after I did, and dated him for about 5 years. And then when we decided to get married, we were able to move into company housing there, which we had been in before, but this was married and it was much bigger. We were really happy. And another 5 years almost went by, and we had our first child up there, and it worked out well. We had her crib in our room, and there was a really wonderful daycare at the other end of the rope tow that took me over to Albion. And I thought, you know, this is going to be perfect. And then 2 years later, I got pregnant with twins, and I was like, oh, how can I do this?
Surprise!
It was really, you know, there weren't any computers, and all of the department heads work 6 days a week. It's just, and I think that was common in the industry, because everything was just scrunched into, you know, 4 or so months of work, but I just knew I couldn't do it. And Chick had retired by then, and our new general manager was a contemporary of mine that started about when I did. And he said, we'll just figure out something, you know, and had prearranged with a company that I was going to take 2 weeks off because there wasn't any maternity leave. And we had hired a nanny, and I went back up. I was going to start for 3 days a week, at least through Christmas, just to try to figure things out. Because I don't even know if I could say my name then. I was so sleep deprived. No one slept for a while. But they kind of stuck me down in with a little desk. And this is going to make you laugh, like in the basement furnace room, because we didn't have very many offices. So I'm sitting down there, again, second guessing, like, what am I kind of second guessing my Crested Butte experience? And it was rough. It was hard to be a woman who was a department head, because the only other person had been Carmen, the woman that I had worked for, and hers was a really different pace. Things had picked up quite a bit in those ensuing years. And frankly, I didn't even get that much support from other women who were in my little area of the building. They were upset that I didn't work full time and must be nice. You know, those comments that are just like, oh, but I couldn't really afford to do anything else. So I stuck it out. I spent most of that winter working with guest relations and lovely media who came in. And then as we were kind of debriefing, as that season went on, the newer general manager said, you know, you're really good with, you know, working with the people that come in from the media and whatever. And this was also a time that more and more of the corporate ownership of the ski areas was coming on. And we were kind of getting lost in the shuffle. We were always very well respected, but we felt like if we didn't throw our head into some of that marketing work and attend the media blitzes around the country. And it was just like someone waved a magic wand. Suddenly I was a PR and marketing person, and I just thrived in it.
Yeah, it was truly what you were meant to do. And and now they call it storytelling. The PR is all about framing the stories. And I think you knew that from the beginning, that, you know, Alta didn't have the fastest lifts or the most lifts or many lifts, but it had this like fairy tale landscape, and it's all about telling that story in the right way. And Alta has really mastered telling that story.
We were really adamant. And again, my biggest partner this time was the general manager, just long talks that, you know, of being real and you know, being really concise and just say, you know, as, you know, first glance, if you look at our skier, you wonder like, what? How can you be 2,200 acres and have five lifts and not even any of them detachables or whatever? Of course, we fixed that a little. We wanted to be honest and not try to gloss over things, but to point out how, yeah, there's not a ton of lodging, but oh my gosh, the people who stay at the lodges have been coming for generations, and they have like a 70% return rate. You go the same time every year and your kids meet these other kids. They become best friends forever. And now they're all adults and grandparents with their families there. And it was probably the perfect place for me to be for concocting a story, because it was easy to share.
So for the listener who's not been to Alta, walk us through, what they would see on a winter visit.
We have gone to a reservation system for cars. So on Friday, Saturday, and Sundays, you have to have a reservation even to park at Alta, and you can't come up and buy it. It has to be attained ahead of time. So it takes a little bit more planning. If you are fortunate enough to be one of that out-of-state folks who comes up and stays right in the village, then you don't worry about this. It has eased the road tension, but on a good powder day that's not even a weekend, it can still take from the mouth of the canyon to the top of the canyon an hour, and it's 9 miles. And we've also opened ourselves up to participation with the Icon Pass and Mount Collective, both of them that we're really proud to be a part of. It's kind of a new mix of people. When you ride the lifts, you're not just riding with, you know, somebody that you might know from downtown. Or we still have a double lift at Wildcat that, please, yon lift parts last forever because it's so iconic. We try to match the numbers of skiers that we're taking up the mountain to the available terrain. So it's either, you know, early season and not enough snow. If we're expecting a busy day, we adjust it. So when you get off of the top, you'll have an experience that probably somebody had in 1984. It's a very weird recipe, but it works. And then the fact that for these new people visiting, they may notice that there aren't lifts that go to every peak. And that also helps with, kind of a pride. It's most of our traverses are at least kind of downhill, but you got to kind of earn your way if you're going for the powder. If you're with your children on our beginner lifts, then no, you don't have to do that. And then if you are staying at one of the lodges or having lunch at one of the mid-mountain places, it still has that rustic feel.
So for planning an Alta trip, you know, finding lodging for a visitor who's not coming from Salt Lake City is very important. So finding the right place for your family, there are different budgets. I visited the Snow Pine, and that's very fancy and new. But is it the Rustler? That's a little bit more rustic nearby. But I did love that something about Alta is that most of them have breakfast and these like communal dinner experiences involved. And that's really something that's unique about the Alta experience. It feels much more European than it does American, where they'll charge you for everything, you know, and that's, oh, that's a little extra. And oh, that's a little extra. But I love that at Alta Lodge, when I've stayed there, you have breakfast together and then you have dinner together and you make, you know, new friends that way, which is really part of the Alta experience as well.
I think you get to be just, you feel like you're a part of a community, and that it's the modified American plan, except for, so it's breakfast and dinner, and it's as you experienced at the Alta Lodge, it's full on gourmet. And then the Peruvian does all three meals, but that was, because even in my early years at Alta, the canyon can be closed for 3 or 4 days, could have been closed for 3 or 4 days. Now, if we go past, you know, 10 o'clock on a morning, it's kind of surprising, but we did have a day and a half closure 2 years ago. So when people would be up at the lodges in those early days, they just wanted to make sure that they were fed. And they used to airdrop food, you know, back in the 50s and 60s. To the lodges when they had those long closures. And we really try to discourage those visitors who are staying up there from even having a car, because each car takes up so much space. Plus, once you get there, you don't go anywhere. And then you have to dig it out before you leave.
There, I think three or four years ago, where I had an inner lodge experience, there was so much snow that you couldn't even leave the Alta Lodge because you would get, you know, you'd get lost in the snowstorm. So kind of explain what that is. Sure. Unusual at most other places other than in your particular valley.
We are one of the major avalanche prone zones in the United States, one that actually has a state highway going up to it. So the reason for the inner lodge really wasn't so you would wander out and get lost, but you could wander out and get involved in some of the artillery that's shot to bring down the snow. So before the patrol and then also the Utah Department of Transportation, they all work together on this. And right now we have some World War II artillery that's slowly being replaced by automatic things that we can detonate from inside of a room with a computer rather than shooting a howitzer. But the canyon from top to bottom really needs to be shot if that storm deposited enough snow all the way down, but it definitely has blessed Alta with it. And so the risk is being in the way of artillery And also there's hand chargers that are, the patrol goes out on the runs and ski tests it and throws hand charges. So you don't want some unknowing lodge guests who thought maybe a good day for a tour. And then of course, the second big concern is if they are successful in bringing down an avalanche, you don't want to be outside. So yeah, it's, and interlodge is kind of a funny word, but it really just means that all travel is closed to walk between any buildings. And sometimes the risk is so big that all the lodge guests have to go down into a basement bunker because avalanches have hit the lodges before. And in the early days of my marketing, I wasn't supposed to really talk about all of that. But then it, just because it'd be like, well, we're not taking our kids there. But we found out that by sharing it, people understood that, you know, the blessings that maybe come with that, because when we finally do get the shooting done and are able to open up, guess what opens up first? The people who are up there in the lodges, because the road, the Department of Transportation has to plow that whole road because they can't be out there plowing. And so you get what they call country club skiing, and you're out there with all those buddies you just had breakfast with, and it's a real treat. So yeah, that's the definition of interlodge. And I will suggest to your listeners that Elta.com's website just has some really fun information on what that is, done through some storytelling with video, but also some factual things. And it's, yeah, it's part of the Elta magic, I guess. You hear those, that ammunition in the mornings, and you can just know that there's something special coming up. Even if you are a beginner skier, a freshly groomed slope with all that fresh snow, that is nirvana.
Here's what a ski mama needs. Help with the gear. Before I had kids, I found that just managing my own ski gear was a bit taxing. Add a kid or two, and that relaxing ski holiday can quickly turn into a struggle fest. That's where Ski Butlers come in. They bring premium ski or snowboard gear to your condo or hotel and take the hassle out of the equation. We used Ski Butlers on our recent trip to Sun Valley, Idaho. The ski technician met us right at our ski locker room of our hotel and had our family outfitted in less than 30 minutes. We never had to leave the hotel. After the kids were finished, they dashed off to the hotel hot tub, and it was a drama-free start to an awesome vacation. And the relationship doesn't stop with the first delivery. Once your gear is delivered, you'll have access to the Ski Butlers to make changes to your equipment based on your on-mountain needs. You can find Ski Butlers in more than 50 resorts in the US, Europe, and Canada. And they just added a new location at Mammoth, California. To get started, go to the Ski Butlers link in the show notes to set up your profile. It's an easy process to register your entire family for skis and snowboard gear. They even offer helmets and goggles. The Ski Butlers think that every ski mom deserves a hassle-free holiday.
And now, back to our show.
So for the family skiers, I think a lot of people wouldn't traditionally think of Alta as a place to teach your kids to ski, but the word on the street is Alta has some of the most magical ski instructors for children anywhere in Utah, let alone in the West. And that ski school really does train amazing lifelong skiers. So what's the kind of the magic mix about the Alta ski school there?
It all started with Alf Engen, who was a Norwegian that came over. He was a ski jumper, but he fortunately ended up at Alta after helping get Sun Valley settled and everything else. And his name should have been Elf instead of Alf. He had this magic thing that he just got up every day and said, "By golly, it's going to be a good day." And he formed that ski school. I think the beginnings of his tenure there were in roughly 1948. So it was about 10 years after we opened. And trained his smaller group of instructors that same way to embrace whatever it is. And by golly, those little ones are the best. And that culture, we've only had a couple of ski school directors since then. And each one of them worked under Alf and carried that to our current guy now, Scotty, who's in his early 60s, and his boys are ski racers because of the ski school. But it was a real passion to just get the kids outside and feeling comfortable in snow. And then we'll just get them on the lift if you want. And, you know, if they don't, you come to pick them up after the lesson, don't feel bad, because this part was so important. And so just the culture developed into, I think, a way of trying to treat that population. And then, again, the success of the ski school and the hard work they've done in understanding skiing technique and running with that. I'm still so proud of, you know, now I think our staff is over 120, and they work closely with our independent. We lease out the daycare business to a fully licensed daycare provider who owns several places downtown, and they work together to even get those youngest, you know, 18-month-old kids out with a flying saucer, to get them ready for skiing and how to put on goggles and walk around in little ski boots and do all of that. So it's a wonderful thing. And they work out just of such a tiny little center over in the Albion Basin, because there isn't a lot of flat land, but it's a joy, especially during the holidays, and hundreds of kids out on the slopes. And
so were your children lucky enough to learn at that ski school?
Yes, they were. There weren't a lot of the programs that there are now to, you know, get kids into like Saturdays long, so like season long ski programs. And when they finally were developed, George and I didn't really have enough money to get all three of them in it. It was a big deal. But I still have a Ziploc baggie, you know, I guess it's the gallon size. And inside is all the little report cards that they had from their ski lessons. And I'm sure we didn't save every one of them. And it's puffed out on the side and zipped at the top. And from, you know, when they were light blue beginners to the black double diamond skiers. And my husband always worked weekends because he ran the lifts, and you didn't get to pick to have a Saturday or Sunday off very easily. And I had a lot of events that happened on Saturdays. So part of it was we would just put them in all day ski school so that they could be with us. and there's a lot of stories about that before they were old enough to be in all day ski school over there under my desk or in this little room down the hall. And I packed picnics and books and crayons, and they all three are just lovely skiers. We feel thankful for the memories and the family time that came from all of
it. Yeah, it sounds like it must have been amazing, but also a lot of challenges, right? Both of you working, parents, and specific times of year that were probably very, very busy, and three little kids. So that's amazing.
Every parent kind of goes through that. It's almost like you feel like I can't focus on either one of the two most important things in my life 100%. Who's getting the shortcut? At least for this particular week or month or
right. season. Who's losing right now?
Losing, you know, those are three really great things. Three kids, person who's happily married to a husband, and we have great health, and then a career. If you were balancing things that were so much worse than that, knowing I was lucky enough to go through all that, and yes, were there tears? Yes. Were there considerations like, I got to get the heck out of here? And so thankfully that balance kept us going, and we managed to get all three of them through undergraduate with no debt to them, part because they worked hard and got some great scholarships. And George and I didn't think we could do it, and we did it, and we're still in our house. We still have our two cars. I'm still really good friends with a lot of the folks that were at Alta when they were just starting, and now they're in their 40s, having children, and just, how did you do it? And I said, you know, the day-to-day thing, sometimes you think, you know, why or how. It just, I think it just works out if you, I mean, you have to pay attention and try to be a little bit prepared and, you know, obviously do some sacrificing, but it just rolled together. And as you guys know now with high school seniors, but it's really about this much time from what You were complaining about how am I going to do this to like, oh my gosh, they might not be living in my house next year.
You're so right. Before we let you go, I do want to ask how you feel now that you see there's so many female GMs. It's so exciting to see this like massive movement of women taking charge at these mountains. I mean, the head of Vail Corp is now female.
It's incredible. Obviously elated, a little bit like, what? But I think that idea, and COVID underscored it even more, of really that life balance. And that did start to happen at Elta. Obviously, when I went back just 3 days a week, and then once I was full-time, I still had to leave every Thursday at 2:30 because I had at least do one day a carpool or I wouldn't have any adult friends left. I mean, women were having trouble getting the flex time, but I think men in those positions, and now God bless those guys too, were nervous about feeling vulnerable about asking for that kind of a privilege. Is it going to affect?
Yeah. Is it going to affect a promotion?
My professional work up here. And so it's totally a win-win for everyone. And I think in the industry, it's almost brought us now on par to some of what I would call not the corporate world, but more settled industry where I think they started to deal with these issues just a little bit sooner than the outliers and, you know, our independent outdoor world. So elated and just really optimistic, just for happy and healthy young people to make their way through the world now and raise children who can have some hopes, because again, you guys are perfect examples. And all of our kids now are in their low 30s, but I just tell them, I'm so sorry about 9/11 and I'm so sorry about COVID. I didn't have those two things. We had things, but those things really shaped their lives, and it's continuing to shape. Just had a daughter who's just an incredible, worked at an incredible venture capitalist funded company in the Bay Area, and she just 345 people of their 500 worldwide employees just got laid off 2 days ago. You know, we had our family call, and she goes, "Well." And I just said, oh my gosh, I had the same job for my whole adult life. And I just, but they're so resilient. So they're being trained, I guess, what these things have done. And
wait, what is the family? What's the family call, Connie?
We do a Zoom call because this daughter lives in Berkeley and our twins both live in Salt Lake. And during COVID, we weren't even seeing our kids much because George and I are in the danger zone. We were over 60. We were actually over 65 when COVID started, and they are really protective. So we did a Zoom call every Monday, and we just go, it could just be a half an hour after you guys get off work so you have time to make dinner. And it would go on for hours. And we're still doing it now to keep our lovely older daughter in California, just knowing about day-to-day lives. And, you know, what's happening, because we really don't talk about world problems. We talk about new dogs or what are you having for dinner? I mean, it's the family conversation you'd have around the dinner table. And technology, thank you. You think I'd be sick of Zoom, because all the board work I do a lot of Zooming, but I think it's a miracle to have it. And then meet in person when you can.
Yeah. So when you and your whole family can get together next and have some ski time, what would après-ski look like for you all?
We usually ski Elta when we do that, because we still have a couple of benefits up there. We usually don't stick around, but sometimes we do, and Nicole, like this, go up to the Sitzmark. It's so small and it's so tender up there. And I usually recognize a lot of the guests, and then of course their staff doesn't have much turnover too. So you kind of go up there to get a little bit of, howdy, Connie and George, how are you guys doing? We miss you. Oh, we're doing fine. But typically we'll, just come to our house and pour some Chardonnay for me and make a little dinner. And truly on Sunday nights, or the two that live in the Valley tend to come here year round, but it's their après ski if we're not up skiing that day to come down. And I'll have the chili in the crock pot. Vegetarian for them. I would say that our family's life is really wrapped up in my character from Heidi. It's that started the dream.
Well, Connie, thank you so much for your time and your energy and for telling us the Alta story. We're excited to get to share this with the other ski moms and for, you know, giving us hope on the other side of all of this. You know, the moms of young ones, that it's going to be okay. The moms of teenagers, it's going to be okay as well. We love that it's really instilled some important values to your family. So thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Ski Moms Fun Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Head to the SkiMomsFun.com website to check out our swag and find out more about our community. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at Ski Moms Fun. We'll be back next week with more interviews and insights. Thanks, Snow. No one works as hard as a ski mom. With Mother's Day right around the corner, we want to remind everyone to shop the Ski Mom's gift guide for the best ideas. These are the gifts we want to give and get for Mother's Day. Prices range from under $10 for simple treats like notepads to big splurges like a new boot bag. Remember, the big day is Sunday, May 12th, so you want to shop now to make sure everything gets there in time for mom. Visit the SkiMomsFun.com gift guides page or click the link in show notes to see our picks for this year. Make it easy for your kids, partner, or spouse and just forward them the link. Or better yet, treat yourself to something from our expertly curated Ski Mom wish list. Remember, visit SkiMomsFun.com and look for the gift guide page.